Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. A very, very busy midweek edition for you. Rex is in San Antonio. That is a JW Marriott, if I have ever seen one, for the Valero Texas Open. And we'll certainly get to that in a second. But first, Rex, some semi-breaking news on Wednesday afternoon, which is when we are recording this podcast. Justin Thomas and Jim Bones McKay, his caddy, are no longer a team. JT announced the split the week ahead of the Masters. What happened and why?
I mean, what happened? We're going to have to wait to find out. Normally, those stories don't come out for a few months, if not years, when you talk about a caddy and a player breaking up, because it's almost like a marriage. Like, I hate to say that, but it does feel like it sometimes when you have two players and a caddy who've been together for so long. I think it was 2.5 years for Bones and JT, and they had accomplished a lot. They won a major championship together. They had played in Ryder Cups together and President's Cups together. Like, there had been a lot of real estate. I'm really curious, because it wouldn't be the first time that a caddy fired a player. And I'm not saying that's what happened, because we just don't know. But I can see a situation where when you – JT has been struggling so much the last few months, where Bones at his age, I can imagine, probably just gets – tired of the runaround, gets tired of the grind. Like, he probably not what he signed on for. Yeah, I've had enough. Although if Michael Greller has held on all these years, I don't know. God bless him. So I would say, and in the short term, it's surprising that it happened this week, because you would think at the very least they could have made it through next week and then figured out what to do from there. That being said, and Todd Lewis was on live from tonight right before me, and he was kind of speculating on what Bones is going to do. Is Bones going to pick up another bag? Is he going to go back working essentially full-time for Golf Channel and NBC Sports? I don't think he's going to pick up another bag. I would be actually surprised, I guess, is a better way of saying it, because this wasn't an issue of Bones itching to get back to be a caddy. I think he really liked working as an announcer. He really liked being on the holes. He just liked the whole lifestyle change after years and years of carrying a golf bag. It was the draw. It was the allure of JT, of what they could possibly accomplish with this generational player, with all of this talent, all of this skill, of what they could possibly accomplish. I don't know that there's someone out there that's going to motivate Bones the way he probably got motivated by JT. I would expect to see him more on TV, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was certainly surprising on a number of fronts. One, you mentioned the timing, which is bizarre to say the least. Like, if this was a mutual parting of ways, like, why wouldn't you possibly wait until after the Masters in order to make a change? Like, that completely stood out to me. Like, you've been prepping, you've been ramping up to this, and all of a sudden you're parting ways a week before the biggest tournament of the year. That's certainly a head scratcher. Secondly, I was actually surprised that Justin Thomas got through 2023 without some sort of seismic change. Typically you see some sort of superstar, and if he has a down year, like, someone's got to take the blame. Sometimes you see the agent get fired if they schedule them incorrectly. A lot of times it's the caddy, maybe it's the swing coach, maybe it's the putting coach, whatever. And JT stuck by his father, Mike, after a little bit of a rough patch in the summer, and still is using him as his swing coach. And now it's Bones who's parting ways, but 4 months after the turn of the new year. The third thing, Rex, that I found was most surprising, is that JT had actually seemingly turned a corner. Yeah. If you look at his results since last fall, he has 8 top 12 finishes, although he has not won. He's certainly playing better. Statistically, his iron play is much improved, kind of owing to the changes that he's made with his dad and kind of getting back to what made him really a generational talent. But his putting continues to suffer outside the top 150 in strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour. Bones wasn't going to fix his putting, and so it seemed like potentially that was a fall. But you know, as you say, there's other complicating factors here. The relationship with JT's dad, obviously, and Bones's relationship with TV. Keep in mind, he was working for NBC Sports, as you mentioned, before JT's bag came open in 2021, and he filled that role. Bones is undergoing another surgery later this year. You could see, with as long as he has been in the caddy yard, just wanting to take it easier. And I thought he was a phenomenal broadcaster. Selfishly, I'd love to see Jim Bones McKay work full-time for NBC Sports. I think he would make the product that much better. But it's a huge surprise. 8 days before the biggest tournament of the year, to see a high-profile relationship like this disintegrate. Very, very surprising.
Yeah, a caddy getting fired is nothing new on the PGA Tour. That happens. There's two kinds of caddies, those who have been fired and those who are about to be fired. In this particular case, it is curious because you pointed out, like, it seems to me JT had turned a corner. It felt like, even though the results probably weren't what he wanted, he was hitting the ball better. He was putting a little bit better, although that sort of unraveled over the last couple of weeks. And you're right. I don't know how you can pin that on Jim Bones McKay because he's not the one holding the putter. He might make a read from time to time, but that's not where the blame should go. In this particular case, it was always going to be awkward. Like, you can't fire your dad. Like, it's, trust me, I've wanted to fire my dad plenty of times in my life, and you just can't do it. I looked it up. It's in the book. You can't fire your dad. And so, yeah, you're right that he probably didn't have anywhere else he could go. I think in the short term, he's going to have Patrick Cantlay's old caddy, Rev, on the bag next week. I think from what I was told, that's sort of just a tryout, that's not going to be a long-term thing. The more interesting thing to me is, does Bones end up on another bag? Because again, I don't think he has much interest in staying in the caddy yard. I think he's perfectly fine. Carrying a microphone is a lot easier than carrying a golf bag around a golf course for 18 holes. Trust me, he'll tell you that all the time. And in this particular case, I just feel like he probably saw something that looked special at the time and figured, man, I can do something really, really cool in a really small window over the next 4 or 5 years with JT, as opposed to that career he had with Phil Mickelson. And it just didn't play out the way he wanted it to.
Yeah, and look, I don't think this, you know, Bones is on the Mount Rushmore of caddies. He spent 25 years alongside Phil Mickelson and now another 3+ with Justin Thomas. You're right. Like, he got back into caddying thinking, boy, I can kind of shepherd him to 5, 6, 7 major championships. Who knows? And Justin Thomas in 2021, fall 2021, like, it looked like he was an absolute rocket ship. They ended up winning just a single tournament together at the PGA Championship, which was certainly a surprise in 2022. Bones is going to have his options. I'm sure several players will reach out, but I think he would fit seamlessly and kind of have this next act of his career in the broadcast booth. I don't even think he wants to do on-course reporting. Kind of, that's the lane that Smiley's occupied now. John Wood, who was a longtime caddy for Matt Kuchar, is also there. You know, Jim Bones McKay had both knees replaced. Again, he's having another surgery later this year, and so I think it's time to take it easy. And I'll be very curious to see how JT gets along with Matt Minister, aka Rev, who is another very well respected caddy and did a great job for Patrick Cantlay for a number of years. I see that Chris Polo, which means you were on television today reporting from the Valero Texas Open. Obviously, the headliner this week is Rory McIlroy. A lot of stuff going on with Rory. Let's set the stage first with his play. Rory won in Dubai, does not have a top 10 this year on the PGA Tour. He's now apparently seeing Butch Harmon, not working with Butch Harmon, but seeing Butch Harmon for a four-hour lesson a couple of weeks ago, essentially a second set of eyes. What's the latest on Rory's after you had a chance to talk with him on Wednesday?
Wasn't a few weeks ago. It was last Wednesday. So he was flying out to the West Coast anyway. He was doing some work with TaylorMade. He was getting fit for a new set of irons. So he decided just to stop over in Las Vegas. And it's not the first time he's done that. I talked to Butch Harmon this morning just about the idea that, you're right, he called it nothing more than a second set of eyes. And he did point out that Butch and Michael Bannion, who is Rory's longtime swing coach, they kind of share a lot of the same swing philosophies. So he said it makes it really, really easy. So, like, I'm telling him the same thing that Michael's telling him. I'm just maybe doing it in a slightly different way. And they clearly have a really good relationship. I asked Rory tonight about going out there, what did you hope to accomplish? And he's sort of explained that, look, he's probably 20% a swing coach now and 80% a sports psychologist. Like, you just go out there and you enjoy yourself. And I've talked to enough players who've rolled into Butch's shop and spent 3 or 4 hours working on their swing and walked away after 3 or 4 hours and didn't feel like they spent a lot of time talking about the swing. They just more talked about the game, sort of life, what you hope to accomplish. And I think that's what Butch at this stage in his career is really, really good at. Like, he can break down the swing better than probably anybody in the game at the moment, but it has more to do with just making a player feel comfortable. And if nothing else, Rory clearly feels more comfortable leaving Las Vegas than he did before he showed up there. I was taken by the idea, and, you know, if you want to take Rory in his totality and what's going on, it feels like from the outside looking in that these are wholesale changes that he's doing going into next week. And for all the right reasons, like, we've talked about this. He's tried to win the career Grand Slam now for essentially a decade. and he keeps coming up short. So this time around, he's decided to do something drastic. That was go to see Butch last week in Las Vegas. That was Monday and Tuesday, the last 2 days spent.
I mean, the Butch thing was not planned. I mean, he didn't say on January 1, you know what, 2 weeks before the Masters comes around, I'm gonna go and see Butch Harmon to make sure everything's in the right place. To me, that shows he's not totally convinced on what he was working on with his longtime swing coach Michael Bannon, who obviously lives in Northern Ireland. That's not the
easiest. But it's not the first time he's done this either. You need to point that out. Like,
it's the first time since 2021. I mean, this was 3 or 4 years ago. Last time he saw him, he did this.
And Butch has done this with other players as well. He did it with Jordan Spieth. Like, this is not out of the ordinary. But last time we saw Rory,
did we not, at the Players' Championship, he said, I'm between two swings, right? I got a driver swing and I got an iron swing, and he's trying to meld the two. If he was convinced that he was on the right path and he was seeing great results in his practice sessions, he would not have gone to see Butch Harmon. He clearly needed something to get him over the edge to make his practice sessions a little bit better. I think that's obvious.
No, I think better to say what was obvious is he just needed to hear probably the same thing phrased a slightly different way. I think that's a better way of saying
it. He went for confirmation.
And since you haven't spoken with Butch or Rory on this, but I'm going to go ahead and go with me, because I think it's important to point out that he's done this before. And you're right. He's stuck between
3 or 4 years ago.
He's stuck between two swings, as he talked about today as well. And I think the important thing to point out here, he doesn't need to figure out which one of those swings is the right swing. He just needs to be confident going into next week. He's played that golf course well. So that's what he's trying to do with all of these things. Like, it sounds complicated. It sounds intense. But what he's really trying to do here is just slow things down, simplify things as much as possible. And that's why, after telling us at the Players that he wasn't going to take a pre-tournament trip up to Augusta, didn't feel like he could get much out of it, he spent Monday and Tuesday of this week up at Augusta trying to get that early practice in. He doesn't plan on getting to Augusta next week until essentially Tuesday afternoon. He'll play 9 holes on Tuesday, 9 holes on Wednesday.
Now that's interesting.
That is. And I think all of it goes to the idea that he has been tinkering with this for a long time. And it was funny talking with other players. I talked with Adam Scott and Max Homa and Ricky Fowler about this. They're all trying to do the same thing, but it's magnified when it comes to Rory because of the stakes, because of the idea that he's trying to do something that very, very few people in the game have done, and that's win the career Grand Slam. And I think better than most, he understands the gravity of that, and it's probably weighed on him heavily for all of these years. And so instead of doing the same thing over and over again, definition of insanity, he's trying to find a new way. I'm not saying this is the right way, but I certainly appreciate the idea that I'm going to mix this all up and see if this way works.
I mean, physically, he knows that his approach play has been really poor this year. That's the most important statistic. It's the greatest indicator of success at Augusta National. Like, I can see wanting to address that. The not coming in until Tuesday afternoon, and I'm sure he'll give a press conference earlier on Tuesday, then go play 9 holes, then play Wednesday. That's typically the big press conference day at Augusta National. That, to me, is very interesting because, as we've documented on this podcast over the past decade, he's tried everything. He's tried everything to break the streak at Augusta National. He's tried doing puzzles at night. He's tried not looking at his phone. He's tried to immerse himself. He's tried saying that the Masters is the most important tournament. The Masters is a not important tournament. He's going to play the week before. He's not going to play the week before. He's literally tried everything. What he has not tried, at least to my knowledge, he has not tried coming in to the Masters tournament on Tuesday afternoon. But I actually like this strategy, Rex. The reason I like this strategy is I'm going to be in Augusta, Georgia on Friday. I'm going to start covering the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And by the time Monday or Tuesday rolls around of Masters week, I'm already kind of beat. I'm already kind of ready for the Masters to get going. Amplify that times 1 million for the Players, whose entire legacies can be rearranged by what happens over those 4 days at Augusta National. And I can see, if you're on site as a player and you get there Sunday, you play 18 holes, you play 9 holes, and you kind of add to the week, by Tuesday or Wednesday, like, you've got to be itching and ready to go. And for a player like Rory McIlroy, who is now, what, in his 10th or 11th try to complete the career Grand Slam at the Masters, it has to be absolutely excruciating. And so why not spend an extra 24, 36, 48 hours at home, get some sort of equilibrium, and then head up into the pressure cauldron that is the Masters? I like this strategy. He's not going to learn anything over this first 3 days that he doesn't already know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the important point. Like, I asked Adam Scott yesterday if he had any intention of doing, like, a scouting trip beforehand, and he's like, why? Like, this is going to be my 23rd Masters. How much more do I have to learn? Like, I asked Rory about the new tee box on number two, and his comment to me was, I didn't even realize it was new.
Until shrugged.
Someone told me. Just kind of like, when someone told me, I was kind of like, oh, okay, I didn't even realize it. Now, there's a couple changes to some greens that I'm sure we'll talk about next week, but by and large, it's the same golf course you've seen for the last 20 years. Essentially, it is interesting to me, and again, talking with Adam Scott about this, that he was really, really quick when I asked him how he prepares for the Masters, what he feels like is the best way of doing it. And I put it in the context of Rory seems to be tinkering with, you know, the mechanics here. He wants to find a better way to do this. And he kind of shrugged and he said the obvious. He said the quiet thing out loud. It's, well, my plight and Rory's plight is a little bit different. Him meaning I have a green jacket. He doesn't. Like, I understand where he's coming from on this. And there's no way, there is no formula for this other than, and I'm sure I would be really, really curious in his heart of hearts if I asked Rory, did you ever ask Arnold Palmer about how the pressure built on him not having won the PGA Championship? And that's what kept Arnold from winning the career Grand Slam. Because I'm sure this is a conversation they had together and how it never gets easier. Like, you never reach a point where you're kind of shrugged and you're like, okay, if it happens, it happens. That never occurs. It just continues to build and continues to build well into you're gray and you're old and you realize that, oh, I don't have a chance of winning this. And I'm sure that in the back of his mind is driving him to make all these changes.
I mean, if Rory McIlroy does go on to win the Masters, whether it's this year or in the future, he would be historically resilient. No player has ever needed this many attempts to complete the career Grand Slam. And so that's certainly something that kind of owes to the amount of scar tissue, those sort of self-imposed pressure that builds as the years go on. Rex, as it pertains to this week and Rory McIlroy, there's not, if you look at the stats, no direct correlation of, you know, Rory's played well at the Valero Texas Open. He's going to then play well at the Masters. But what do you think would constitute a successful week? What sort of progress do you need to see that would elevate Rory in your mind to maybe the second or third favorite behind Scottie Scheffler, as opposed to where he probably sits right now, which is in that 4, 5, 6 range?
Statistically, this is easy. If he finishes in the positive in strokes gained off the tee, it's a really, really hard driving golf course. I don't know if you know this, but the wind blows in Texas, and that's not going to make things any easier. And there's nothing about this golf course that you can compare to Augusta National. I had this conversation today with Corey Connors, who's a 2-time winner here. To your point, he won here last year and missed the cut at the Masters. So there is no correlation between playing well in San Antonio and somehow traveling to Augusta with a good game. Other than if you're driving the ball well here under these conditions on this golf course, which there's not a lot of room to miss, then you're probably playing well enough that you should have some expectation going into the Masters. So if he can do nothing else, like, I'm not going to put a number on where he should finish. I'm not going to sort of quantify it any other way other than if he could finish in the positive and strokes gain off the tee, which he did not do at the Players' Championship, which we talked about, that he's between two swings and the driver's swing seems to be the one he's struggling with right now. If he can do that, then I think that's a positive sign going into next week.
You're looking at Rory's driving performance. I'm looking, as I mentioned, at his approach play. Been really poor, losing strokes to the field on the PGA Tour this year, most important statistic at Augusta National. Would just like to see progress there. Closer proximity to the hole, gaining strokes against the field. I think that would be a positive. And I wouldn't rule out, like, if Rory does play well this week in Texas, like, he's made it pretty clear in his career that he can get on runs. You know, when you think back to his torrid stretch that he had in 2014 when he won his last major, he won 3 tournaments in a row. They were not consecutive weeks. But he won the Open Championship, he won the Bridgestone, which was then played at Firestone, and then he won the PGA Championship the week after that. So he has gotten hot and continued that play, and so I wouldn't rule out the possibility that if he does top 5, top finish, get himself in contention, he's still going to be overshadowed by Scottie Scheffler next week, which I do think is Rory's benefit. He's still sliding a little bit under the radar.
Oh, he's definitely in that. Well, there's a Scottie Scheffler tier. We talked about this earlier in the week. And then there's pretty much everyone else. And so you're going to have Jon Rahm. I would put Rory in that second tier right behind him. I would put Brooks Koepka. And again, we keep going back to, and everyone had something to say in the comments after the podcast earlier this week. You just don't know. Like, it's just hard to quantify exactly. I'm sure Jon Rahm is playing really, really well. But based on what we normally assume, based on what we argue, that, okay, he's playing well, X, Y, Z, the reasons you just pointed out for Rory, like his ball striking is sublime and he's putting well and his driving is better than average. Okay, then that makes him a good person in this particular case. I would argue in Rory's case, if he misses the cut here this week or if he finishes tied for fourth or wins, I'm not quite sure it impacts next week one way or the other. I will say that as it applies to him mixing up the formula and playing the week before the Masters or any major, both I talked to two players this week who had interesting takes on it, both Brian Harman and Max Homa. Both said that they will play the week before major, week before every major this year. And Brian was really good at explaining it. And he goes, normally I did not do that traditionally in my career. And he goes, but last year I played the Scottish. And of course I went on to win the Open Championship. And his team broke it down during the offseason. And statistically, he always plays his best in the second week out, whether if that's a major.
I think that's probably true for a lot of guys, Rex.
Max said the same thing to me, which is interesting because it's not hard to break down those numbers. Like you don't need to take you don't need strokes gained to take that deep dive to realize that, oh, I'm better off playing one week, miss a cut, contend, whatever the case may be, anything else in between. But at least then I figured out the things I need to work on, the things I'm doing well, and I can go into the next week clean. I don't know why more players haven't realized this.
I think they're starting to adopt that. I think a lot of players did not want to take 3 weeks off between the Players' Championship and the year's first major. In fact, the only top 10 players who are doing so are Patrick Cantlay and Victor Hovland, both of whom are struggling with their game and probably wanted to toil away from the spotlight as opposed to putting themselves in the tournament competition. I think that's what Max is telling you, what Harman is telling you, I think is a really good strategy where you kind of see where you are the first week, refine over the weekend and in your early prep, and then that you should be peaking a little bit by that second week. And also the schedule in 2024 is a little bit differently this year. I think it's more conducive for this sort of setup. You have the Texas Open, which again, TPC San Antonio is not a great harbinger of success for Augusta National. But moving forward, you're going to have Quail Hollow the week before the PGA Championship. You're going to have Memorial Tournament the week before the U.S. Open. You're going to have the Scottish Open the week before the Open Championship. That's a little bit more inviting to players, I think, to play their way into major championship contention than other weeks. Who else, Rex, do you think needs a good week? Pretty strong field. Jordan Spieth, Ludvig Åberg, Max Homa, Kyle Morikawa, Hideki Matsuyama. In your opinion, who else besides Rory are you paying attention to this week?
Jordan. I think Jordan's an obvious choice. He played nine holes earlier this morning and went straight to the range. He actually went to the far end of the range, which I didn't even know they had here at TPC San Antonio until someone pointed out that, no, Jordan is way down there on the other end. He was down there with his swing coach, Cameron McCormick. It was interesting. He was into the wind on the other side of the range. So I'm not quite sure what anyone who's ever done this before will tell you that it's a lot easier to find maybe not your swing, but something that feels more comfortable hitting shots downwind. Like I never want to try to find something hitting into the wind. So it was a curious decision by Jordan. And look, he's one of those players that's going to go down in history that seems to find another gear at Augusta, whether that's, I don't know, Fred Couples or Bernhard Langer or Phil Mickelson or whoever the case may be. Clearly, his relationship with Augusta is just different and he'll find something. And I don't think either one of us or anybody should be surprised if somehow he finds his way into contention next week. But we talked about JT not having his game and struggling a little bit. We spoke at nauseam about Rory McIlroy. I think Jordan is right there next to him. I don't know how comfortable he is with his game at the moment. We talked about this on Sunday, like just listening to him play last week in Houston was a study in contrast. It was a study in how difficult this game could possibly be.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. He has had, I believe he even described it a couple of weeks ago as a weird year. You know, he had a chance to win at Kapalua. Everyone got really excited thinking that this could be a huge year for Jordan. Had another good week at Phoenix. He was actually in the mix through 36 holes at Riviera, then has stomach issue, has to go to the bathroom, ends up getting disqualified for signing an incorrect scorecard and really has not looked all that sharp since. Everyone's kind of pointing to the Players' Championship. He's never played well at TPC Sawgrass. The one year he did was in his debut. Ever since then, it's like the place completely has his number. I think this will be a big week to kind of reset for him. A former winner at TPC San Antonio, likes the golf course, continually plays this golf tournament. I would expect Jordan to play better. And I would certainly expect him to be in the mix at the Masters. I mean, the guy's record speaks for itself. Six top four finishes in what he's still 30 years old. I mean, his imagination, his creativity, it's clearly a place that he can shine. And his short game and his putting this year, as opposed to previous years, is actually a little bit sharper. So even if he is missing greens, I think he has the confidence to make those par savers that perhaps was a little lacking a couple years ago. I also, Rex, I think it's going to be important to see a player like Ludvig Åberg, driving machine, going to be making his Masters debut. Obviously, we talked about no first-timers won the Masters in what's been more than four decades at this point. He, along with Wyndham Clark, seem as good as any bets to kind of break that streak. Kyle Morikawa has not done much, despite having a good record at Augusta National. Max Homa has not done much in 2024. And Hideki Matsuyama, former winner at Augusta National, would love to see his great form continuing. How about the LIV guys, Rex? You mentioned how hard it is to kind of put in perspective what they're accomplishing. But they are playing this week at Trump National Doral in Miami. It's actually the fifth LIV event of the year. Contrast that to last year. The LIV guys just played three times before the year's first major. Phil tied for second. Brooks was the 54-hole leader. Patrick Reed had another good week. And a couple other LIV players performed well. I like LIV's strategy of kind of front-loading the schedule and then kind of maintaining for the rest of the year. And as Brooks Koepka said when he met the media on Wednesday in Miami, this is the first big boy golf course in Doral that the players have actually played this year. And it's a great preparation for Augusta National. Who has your attention this week at LIV Miami?
I mean, certainly John Rahm. I mean, he's coming in as a defending champion, all those things that you would point at. And I keep going back to the idea that I think we've moved beyond the idea that if you went to LIV Golf, suddenly you're not a top five or top three or top two player or whatever, wherever it is we want to put John Rahm. Like, it's ridiculous to sit and think that he's going to show up at Augusta National somehow being a different player. That would be ridiculous. Brooks Koepka would be in the exact same category. I think Phil's finished last year, and I wrote the column on Sunday, and there was a lot of emotion. It was weird emotion because I felt like for him, a runner-up finish at that stage in his career in any other context would have been, okay, I gave it a shot and it didn't work out. However, in that context, there was tears, there was celebration. You know, we tried to talk to his manager and he just wouldn't do it because he couldn't bring himself to talk about it. He was so emotional about it. I don't think we can underestimate how much that actually meant to him. But I don't know, based on what we've seen over the last 2 years, we can dismiss any of them. Like, okay, maybe you can dismiss Anthony Kim since he's not playing in the Masters, but you get what I'm saying. Like, if I think there's 13 LIV players in the Masters. And my guess is if we sat and broke it down, however it is we want to break it down, I don't think I'm going to be surprised if any of them find their way somewhere close to the leaderboard, because we can't quantify how well they're playing. We don't have strokes gain. We don't know.
That's where you're wrong, my friend.
Okay.
Mike McAllister, formerly of the PGA Tour and now with LIV Golf, tweeted out the LIV Golf strokes gained report, both in the last tournament that they played, I believe in Hong Kong, and the season leader in strokes gained. Rex, if you had to guess, this would be a fun game, if you had to guess which three players on LIV Golf are leading the tour in strokes gained, one should be easy.
I mean, you're talking about strokes gained total, right? He didn't break it down for tee to green. Like, okay.
This is strokes gained total. They do have clear, a breakdown, but I'm talking
about the breakdown. I want to see what we see when we go to the PGA.
He has that as well. I'm talking about which three players have played the best against their competition on LIV Golf this year. Number one should be easy.
Number one should be easy. Should it be Taylor Gooch?
No, Joaquin Neiman.
Joaquin was going to be my second
two-time winner. All right.
That was going to be my second guess. And I would put probably John Rahm's played pretty well. So I'd put him in that top three.
You nailed him. Neiman is number one. Rahm is second. Taylor Gooch is third.
All right. So never mind. Apparently we do know exactly how they're going to play. So all three of those guys are going to play well.
Taylor Gooch, of course, controversially is not in this year's Masters. Neither is number four in strokes gained total, who is Paul Casey. But a couple other interesting names, if you go down that list.
Dustin Johnson
is four. Yes, exactly. He's actually tied for third. If you're looking, put 1.57 strokes gained per event. But DJ's played well. Bryson, Brooks, all those players we're going to see. To me, you mentioned it wouldn't be surprising if any of them popped up at Augusta and won. I
within reason.
Yeah, I mean, no. So I basically broke it down to five guys. To me, John Rahm, Joaquin Niemann, Cam Smith, Brooks Koepka, and Dustin Johnson. To me, those are the big five who, if any of those players won the Masters, you would not at all be surprised. The players among whom I'm dismissing, Bryson DeChambeau, his best finish at Augusta National is a T21 when he was an amateur. He is, remember when he called it a par, was it a par 67 or par 60? I believe it's a par 67.
67.
Based on what he's, what he said, that has not come to fruition. Look, I'd love to see Beefy Bryson in the mix. Historically, that does not appear likely to happen. Sergio Garcia, the only one top 10 since 2014 was his victory. Tyrrell Hatton, one top 25 at seven tries. Adrian Meronk missed cut last year. Phil Mickelson, that performance last year at the Masters came out of nowhere. And it would, I think it would be even more surprising this year. Three of his four live starts.
I agree.
He has been outside the top 30. But as you know, going down Magnolia Lane, it does seem to conjure a little bit of magic. Although I must say, I would kind of put Phil in the Tiger category and probably to a lesser extent, the Spieth category, where I don't think prior performance weighs all that much. There's such an intimate course knowledge. You know that you don't have to be perfect. You know exactly where you can miss. Now, you still need to execute the shot in order to put it where you absolutely cannot miss. But I would expect actually all three of those players to make the cut. Tiger, Phil, and Spieth. We'll get into that in the preview podcast next week from Augusta National. But those players, like, you would expect them to at least play four rounds and see how it hashes out over the weekend.
I mean, it's hard to miss the cut at the Masters. Let's be clear. Like,
Rory did it last year. JT did it last year.
I'm not saying it's impossible, but you have to play pretty bad to miss the cut at the Masters. It's about a 100-man field. And they
easiest major to win, too.
They cut the low 60 in ties. 65 in ties?
50.
Oh, 50. Thank you very much. So it's, yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to say that, yes, Tiger would, if Tiger plays, we're not 100% sure if he's even going to play at this point. Phil's a little bit different. I don't know that I would put him. I see where you're going with the idea that, okay, there's some sort of gear that switches in his head when he makes the ride off Washington on Magnolia. I get that. I totally understand where you're coming from. I just don't buy that he should be in the same category as Jordan Spieth. Now, maybe
no, put
Tiger.
Him, no, put him in the category as Tiger. Spieth, I think, has aspirations of winning. Tiger, yes. And Phil, they might aspire to win, but it's not going to happen. Spieth can actually legitimately win the golf tournament.
You know, it's interesting in the context, and I was talking with a friend of ours, James Corgan, who is a correspondent from London Times? That doesn't sound
right. Telegraph.
Telegraph. Thank you very much. And we were talking about the Ryder Cup, and I think you and I discussed this on the podcast last week, about the advisory board met, and they're trying to come up with some sort of way to keep those players who join LIV Golf from not being on the Ryder Cup team next year. And we were sort of talking about just sort of spitballing some of the scenarios. And one of the scenarios is probably the easiest one, is just to give each captain of each team a wild card pick. Because his argument was, do you think that Luke's going to need more than one pick? As far as if he really needs to dig in and decide that, okay, John Rahm has to be on this team, then of course, John Rahm's going to be that pick. But he sort of dismissed the idea. And I think you and I talked about, like, does Tyrrell Hatton really have to be on that team? No, not really. And then you can start going down the list of Ian Poulter's men's world.
Depends if John Rahm wants Tyrrell Hatton to be on the team, since that was his partner.
Maybe. But John Rahm has also had other partners. He's had Rory McIlroy as a partner. So I don't think he's had Sergio Garcia as a partner. Clearly, that's not going to happen this time around. I countered and said that worked for Luke. It doesn't work for whoever the U.S. captain is going to be. Because the U.S. captain would probably like to have Brooks and probably Bryson, if I'm being honest. And depending how DJ is playing, you might want to have DJ on that team. So I think it would be a bigger challenge for the U.S. team to sort of come to some sort of conclusion about, all right, if we only get one off LIV, this guy should be it. I think it's harder for the U.S. to do that than for the Europeans.
This is why they should just go all 12 captains picks. Mold the team.
Nobody wants to do that.
Mold the team in the captain's being. Let him have full control over the roster. You could leave off a top five player in the world if it's sort of a cancer. You can fill it up with bombers. You can have all the best putters. However you want to do it, I'd love to see it. We're never going to see it, but man, all 12 captains picks, that is the way the Ryder Cup should be played. Rex, before we get out of here, I did want to mention, speaking of live guys, Anthony Kim spoke out for the first time for a detailed interview in about a dozen years. Sat down with David Faraday, the Live Golf broadcaster, and he detailed, Anthony Kim did, at least some of his struggles. AK is clearly saving a lot for the documentary for which he is taking part. But he did say, among other things, that he sought treatment for an undisclosed health issue in early 2023 that got him on the road to recovery and eventually a return to professional golf. He didn't play golf at all before Live Golf CEO Greg Norman called him about 3 months ago to gauge his interest in a return to Live. What was your takeaway from AK about a 20-minute feature that appeared on the Live Golf Plus app earlier this week?
I was left wanting. Like, I want more. And that has nothing to do with, that's not a criticism of David Faraday or Live
it was
Golf
actually
Plus.
Really, it was actually a really well-done feature for someone who's tasked with doing features for Golf Channel. I thought it was a pretty good 20 minutes.
But I need more than 20 minutes.
Yep.
And that, again, that has nothing to do with David or anything else that has to do with this, because there's so many more questions that you want answered. And David's probably the right person to do that. He's struggled with his own addiction. So I understood where they were coming from trying to do this. You sort of had an unlimited platform, though. You could have given us 45 minutes. And I'm not saying that would have been satisfying and I'd have been happy at the end of that, but it would have been interesting. I'm writing a story tonight for golfchannel.com on the idea of players. PGA Tour players that I talked to. I talked to Adam Scott about this and some other players about the idea that, do you have any interest in Anthony Kim's story? Mm-hmm. And I was sort of taken by the idea that they're all fans. They're in the exact same sort of category as you and I are. Like, they're kind of on the edge of their seats. And yes, give me more. It's the Jon Stewart eating the popcorn gif is what we're talking about here. Like, yes, we want to get all of it. Like, catch us up from the moment you walked away 12 years ago to when Greg Norman reached out to you. That part was fascinating to me, that it wasn't until Greg reached out that he was like, yeah, maybe I can play golf again. Let me see if I can start. That was 2 months ago. Like, that's sort of amazing to me. But I am taken by the idea, and again, Adam Scott probably put it in the best context, that he goes, I've seen players walk away for a month. I've seen players walk away because of injury for a year, maybe even 2 years. And I've seen how hard that is. He goes, it's impossible in my mind to wrap around how you do it for 12 and then decide, okay, to come back, because maybe the gear is still there, but there's got to be something in your DNA that you're able to flip week in and week out. If you're on the road, if you're at a tournament, like, you need to get into that mode. And to not do that for 12 years seems impossible. It's like any other muscle. Like, you haven't worked out in 12 years and suddenly you think you can run a marathon, is kind of how he equated it.
I mean, I think anyone who watched that feature was left wanting more.
Yeah.
And, you know, David Faraday essentially asked AK, like, where'd you go? And his answer was essentially, I hung out around the house a lot, didn't see many people, watched a lot of reality TV, and hung out with my pets. And at that point, I kind of threw my hands up, like, is this what we're going to go? And it became apparent, like, yeah, I'm saving this for the documentary. I know it's going to frustrate a lot of people, but it's his story to tell. If that's the platform that he wants to do it in his own words, go for it. And I'm sure I will binge watch that, as many golf fans will. I don't think anyone who watched that, Rex, could feel anything but empathy for AK. It's clear that he has been through absolute hell over the past decade, a lot of it of his own doing. But in a professional golf landscape where it's such a homogenous tour, where you have similar players with similar backgrounds who have taken pretty similar paths to where they are on the world stage, like, you can't help but feel empathy for someone who didn't, who kind of had a difficult childhood, who allowed himself to kind of fall in line with the wrong crowd, who maybe wasn't smart enough to see that he was being taken advantage of. He said there was a bunch of con artists, scam artists, snakes who were even living under his own roof. And so, you know, obviously expectations are low for his second act. As you pointed out, you can't just flip a switch 2 months ago and say, yeah, I want to start playing professional golf again and think that, you know, you can take over the world. But I do hope that AK's second act can be meaningful professionally, but I really hope it is personally for him, to find some happiness, to find some inspiration, to help someone, to feel better about his career, because it's pretty clear that he's pretty damaged psychologically by what's transpired.
I had a chance to ask Billy Horschel about this, and he immediately went to the idea that he had watched it, and he goes, I heard him use words like, I have a lot of gratitude now. And Billy is intimately familiar with this. His wife has gone through a very public bout with alcoholism. And he goes, I could recognize the things he was saying from things in that community, where there's certain steps and there's certain things you have to sort of embrace if you're going to get on the path to being a better person, being the best person you could possibly be. And he goes, I don't know what his motivations are. And this is Billy telling me, I don't know what his motivations are to get back into the game. And he goes, but it seems to me it's part of it, at least, is the idea that I can send a message to everyone else. That's, look, everyone is dealing with something. And if you're dealing with some of these urges and some of these issues, that maybe it takes 12 years, but you can come out the other side. And thanks to Liv Goff, and, you know, good for all the reasons that we can point out, he has a second chance. He's got the second act. And if he can do any good in this second act, trying to make it normalize the idea that everyone is dealing with something. And if you just take the time and you put the right people around you, that you can get past this. Like, you have to be focused and you have to be tough, but you can get past this. I thought that was fascinating.
He spoke lovingly of his wife, Emily, who was kind of his draw and to bring him back. She wanted to pick up the game. He played as well. Obviously wants to kind of make her dedication and sacrifice worthwhile. Obviously has a 2-year-old daughter, Bella. He wants to provide and be an inspiration for her as well. We'll continue to root for AK, and he will tee it up this week at Live Golf Miami and the rest of the 2024 season as a wild card player. Rex, next time you and I will get together, we'll be in Augusta, Georgia. You and I'll get together on Saturday, I believe, for a steak cookout. Thanks to Jason and Susie at their Augusta rental house. We'll also watch the final four games and reminisce about what should be a thrilling final round of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. In the meantime, what are you looking forward to over the next 72 hours?
Hopefully we don't burn down the house this year. We promise. We'll do better this year.
We're gonna cook outside. The weather should be phenomenal. If you guys have not looked at the extended forecast for the Masters Tournament, it's going to be mid to upper 70s, a very small chance of rain, very moderate winds. I'm really expecting Augusta National. They got drenched pretty good on Wednesday morning, caused a slight delay to the ANWA. But I think by tournament days next week, specifically with the sub-air system that they have in place, like, that place should be firm, it should be fiery, and it should be a lot of fun. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. mcsports.com/golf for the latest news, notes, and updates. Make sure to check out Rex, who is doing, I believe, the broadcast interviews on Thursday and Friday. Don't stumble on those. I'll be at Augusta National for the practice round for the Augusta National Women's Amateur in between the second and third and slash final rounds.
What are you going to do in a practice round? I have to ask, like, what do you do for the practice round?
So for the practice round, it's a little bit tricky. So you can't go out on the golf course. Okay. What we can do is stand by the big tree and wait for all the competitors to come through.
And you feel like this is a good use of your time.
For the guests to come through. It is a good use of my time because I have to appear on live from Augusta National, the Augusta National Women's Amateur on Saturday, in which I'll be tasked with delivering notes on these players who I have not covered in the last 51 weeks. And so, yes. That is a time where I'm sort of panicked, talking to as many people as I possibly can so I can sound somewhat coherent on national television. And then I'll probably write a game story on Saturday night. I'll be alongside our colleague, Brentley Romine, who is much more entrenched in the college and amateur game than I am currently. But it should be a great week. I love the event. I tell everyone. Everyone wants to put in for Masters badges, and I get it. If you get a chance, go to the Augusta National Women's Amateur as well. Yeah. It's about half the number of patrons on site, the exact same experience. You still get to go to the merchandise center. You still get to buy the $1.50 sandwiches. You still get to drink the cold beer. And you can actually have a, I would say, a more enjoyable viewing experience than the Masters, which is pretty hectic. So I really enjoy these 2 days, but then check back, obviously, middle of next week when I'll be jaded and bitter, most likely, about something. All right. That's definitely a long enough podcast for this midweek edition. Talk to you guys in a couple of days. Have a great rest of the week.